Good morning. Welcome to Kalachanji's morning Bhagavatam class. This morning's verse is from the 11th canto, chapter 18, verse 10. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Janna Balaba Kiribaradari Jaya Gopi Janna Balaba Kiribaradari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jana Balaba Kiribaradhari Jaya Gopi Jana Balaba Kiribaradhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari I'll read each word individually, and then that'll warm us up to chant the whole verse. Ya tu etat krishrata chirnam tapa nishreyasam mahat kamaya alpiyase Yunjat Balisha Ka Apara Tata Yaste Tat Krishratas Chirnam Tapo Nishreya Sang Mahat. Kama Kama Yalpai Se Yunjad. I'm going to try that again. Kama Yal Piase Yunjad. Balisha Ko Parastata. Yastvetat Kritsratas Tirnam. Tapo Nishreya Sang Mahat. Kamayal Piase Yunjad. Balisya Koparastata. Yastve Tat Kritsratas Chirnam. Tapo Nishreya Sang Mahat. Kamayal Piyase Yunjad. Balisha Ko Parastata. Ya. One who. To. Indeed. Etat this, Kritsrata, with great penance, Chirnam, for a long time, Tapaha, austerity, Nikshreyasam, awarding ultimate liberation, Mahat, glorious. Kamaya, for sense gratification. For sense gratification. Alpiyase, insignificant. Yunjat, practices. Balishaha, such a fool. Kaha, who? Apara, else. Tataha, besides him. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. One who, with long endeavor, executes this painful but exalted penance, which awards ultimate liberation, simply to achieve insignificant sense gratification, must be considered the greatest fool. Please repeat. One who with long endeavor. Hare Krishna. I'll start that again. One who with long endeavor. Executes this painful but exalted penance, which awards ultimate liberation, simply to achieve insignificant sense gratification, must be considered the greatest fool. Purport. Although the process of vanaprastha described by Lord Krishna is so glorious that even the consolation prize is promotion to Maharloka. One who consciously performs this process for such promotion to heaven is certainly the greatest fool. The Lord does not want this process to be abused or exploited by materialistic rascals. For the ultimate goal is love of Godhead. the verse again. One who with long endeavor executes this painful but exalted penance, which awards ultimate liberation simply to achieve insignificant sense gratification, must be considered the greatest fool. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthag Buddhile Srimate Ravindra Sarup Dasiti Namane Gurudev Dividya Ashastra Siddhanta Jide Prabhupada Bhakti Marga Rakshanaya Namostute Om Gyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Panchakalpadarubhyas Chakripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So, as usual, the Srimad Bhagavatam is absolutely packed with meaning. We could find something in every single word that is full of meaning and rich with instruction. This is the section where Lord Krishna is defining the duties of a vanaprastha, one who has passed through two orders of spiritual life, namely the first 25 years as a celibate student, brahmachari, the next 25 years as a pious householder, grihastha, and then from 50 on, there is a famous statement in the Vedas, pancha shodvam vanam vrajet. Vrajet means one should go, and vanam is forest, just like we sing in the morning. Jamunatira vanachari. Krishna is sporting in the forests of Vrindavan, vana. At the age of 50, pancha shodvam vanam vrajet. So Lord Krishna is actually giving detailed instructions in Srimad Bhagavatam, speaking to Sri Uddhava, that one should leave his wife with mature sons, or else take him along with him. But in any case, one should perform austerities, tapo, by eating bulbs, roots, and fruits that grow in the forest, dressing with grass, bark, leaves, animal skins, that things that can be found in the forest. Shouldn't manicure nails. No over-endeavor for keeping teeth clean. No grooming the hair. One shouldn't be eating too much. And then, on top of all that, one should actually make the situation fairly uncomfortable from the point of view of sense gratification. You know, in the cold of the winter, one should be up to one's neck in cold water. And then in the summer, one should be surrounded by fires with the blazing sun overhead. One should never collect more food than they can eat in one meal. No provisions for the future. And, you know, if it wasn't clear enough, the Lord actually says he explicitly forbids animal sacrifices, even those sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas. So he admits, of course, that there are animal sacrifices that are mentioned in different parts of the Vedas. But he makes it clear that that is not for this time in life. And practicing this severe, rigorous lifestyle, Lord Krishna says, accepting only the bare necessities of life, one becomes so emaciated that he appears to be mere skin and bones. And thus worshiping me through severe penance, he goes to the Maharloka planet and then directly achieves me. And then today's verse, one who with long endeavor executes this painful but exalted penance, which awards ultimate liberation simply to achieve insignificant sense gratification, must be considered the greatest fool. Lord Krishna uses this word fool in different places. Often the word used is mudha, or ass, like a donkey. A lower animal, mudha. In this verse, the word balishaha is used as such a fool. So the Vedas are like instruction manuals for the universe. Just like if you get a complicated machine that you purchase, it is going to include a manual for operation. So if you get a fax, copy, print, multifunction device from the office supply store, and you bring it home and you decide you want to use it to make a fruit smoothie, then aren't you a fool? I mean, it's not really going to work, but you could try. You could try to smash fruits against the plate and glass, and using that thing that they lift up on the top, right? You could smash all the fruits there and like somehow awkwardly collect the juice or something. But when you read the instruction manual, you know, if you do, you'll find out that this is not what this is for at all. This is for something else. So in the same way, Lord Krishna stresses that, you know, even though the Vedas give diverse instructions to human beings because of the natures of their very desires. And indeed, there are many parts of the Vedas that glorify the process of performing charity, penance, austerity, meditation, yoga, in order to achieve heaven. But Lord Krishna warns us against being attracted by these flowery words of the Vedas. And he strongly condemns in the Bhagavad Gita, he strongly condemns the process of going to heaven. Why would he do that? It seems like such a benefit for the living being to go to heaven, because one gains a lifespan of, you know, from 10,000 to 100,000 years. One gains a body that, you know, is very beautiful, with, you know, extremely good health. Facility for sense gratification is just amazing. But the point is that one has to come back down and suffer in repeated birth and death. Ah, Brahma, Bhuvanal Loka, Punar Arvartino Arjuna. That one, even if they go to the highest planet in the material world, which is Brahmaloka, of the 14 planetary systems, Earth being in the middle, Brahmaloka is the topmost planet. Lord Brahma has the longest span of life. And he but although he's appears to be immortal from our point of view, he still dies. And he has to undergo birth and death just like we do. So Lord Krishna, being our ultimate well-wisher, our best friend, Suridam Sarvabhutanam, wants us to perform sacrifice only to achieve the highest goal. Here in the verse, Tapo Nishreyam, Nishreyasam. There are Shreyas and there's Preyas, sometimes called short-term returns or long-term gains. So Preyas is short-term gain, and Preyas is long-term gain. So in the short term, if you go to heaven, yay, that's really good, you're winning, and then the next, you know, millennium, you're losing. So that constant up and down in the material world, rotating through various species of life, is not recommended by Lord Krishna, because he wants us to achieve our Shreyas, our ultimate goal of life. So in the 15th chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, Sarvasya chaham hridishani visto matta smritir jnanam apohanam cha vedais cha sarvair aham eva vedyo vedanta krit vedavit eva chaham. I am situated in everyone's heart. Sarvasya chaham hridishani visto. From me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Matta smritir jnanam apohanam cha vedais cha sarvair. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. Indeed, I am the knower of the Vedas. I'm the compiler of Vedanta. By all the Vedas, Lord Krishna is to be known. And so he's making that clear here, that all the rituals, all the external endeavor, all the pain that you will undergo, if you do that for a temporary result, Lord Krishna says, you're a fool. And it's also like a flight plan. It's highly unusual to read any type of literature that is so authoritative, that can so specifically give guidance about the meaning of human life. It's so often joked about that, you know, there's so many cartoons of some man with great difficulty climbing to the top of the mountain to find the sage that's at the top in meditation and ask him the meaning of life. It's considered a joke. That there could even be a meaning of life is considered absurd by some people in the scientific community. But actually the Vedic literatures are so full in their guidance for human beings who are faithful, who have faith in Shastra, that they take us from cradle to grave in terms of instructions, from womb to tomb. We are given information about the correct way to live. And why would there be a correct way to live? Why not just live any old way? Why not just live any way you feel like living? Live and let live, right? Because human life has a purpose and a goal. And one who is considered intelligent if they know the goal of life. They're considered more intelligent if they act according to the goal of life. And they're even most intelligent and most fortunate if they achieve the goal in life. There's actually a measure of success and failure in human life. Of course, this is based on knowledge. In the beginning, there are three divisions of knowledge. And all knowledge in the Vedas can be summed up and divided into three divisions. Sambandha Gyan, Abhideya Gyan, and Prayojana Gyan. Sambandha is the first knowledge that enlightens us about the tattvas and the nature of our existence, and the fact that we are spirit soul, jiva, that this material world is created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, and that our duty in relationship to the Supreme Whole is service. That is Sambandha Gyan. The next level of understanding is called Abhideya, and the Abhideya knowledge is the specific knowledge of how to execute activities, how to how to properly live with that understanding as a foundation, as a basis. It's called Abhideya. But where are we going? Prayojana. Prayojana is the supreme goal. The supreme goal for all living entities is to achieve love for the Supreme Lord, the source and master, the creator, the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So, Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. No one knows these things. Asuras, those who are against the plan of the Lord, by definition, demons, disregard Krishna. They disregard all Shastra, which includes Vedic Shastra and other Shastras. They want to consider that they're the lords of this world, and they are perfect, powerful, and happy. Ishwaraham, aham bhogi. I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. I'm perfect, powerful, and happy. Who needs God, right? Because I've amassed all this wealth by my own work, and I'm going to enjoy these fruits. So, for various reasons, asuras, specifically asuras, those who are actually demons, by definition, rebel against the authority of the Supreme Lord. They do not like any type of authority other than their own. And when someone comes along with a book that says, hey, you should do this, they don't want to follow that. Yashastri vidhim utsrija vartate kamakarata. Na sa siddhim avapnoti, na sukham na param gatim. For those who disregard the injunctions of Shastra and act according to their own whims, they attain neither happiness, nor peace, nor the supreme destination. Of course, there are innocents, and the innocents just don't know. They don't have this information because, like all of us, they were born into ignorance. Om Ajnana Timirandasya. Om Ajnana. Ajnana Timirandasya. Ajnana is ignorance. Everyone is born into ignorance when they're born for the first time by their parents. That is considered animal birth. The first birth by our parents is considered animal birth because we're just as ignorant as animals, unless we become dvija, or twice born, which is to say that we study the Vedas under a bona fide spiritual master, and we become dvija. Twice born, dvi. Dvi is two. Ek is one. Dvi would be two. Ja, janma. So dvija means twice born. But that means to become civilized by becoming aware and learning the Vedas at as early an age as possible. Komaram acharet pragyo. From the age of five, if possible. Thank you. And then we'll get the script. Then we'll get the knowledge. Then we'll get the instruction manual. We'll get the flight plan. Just like a pilot, in order to fly a plane. This body is compared to many different things. In one sense, it's the city of nine gates, right? So there's the spirit soul, due to our desire to enjoy in this material world, due to our lust and our tendency to want to lord it over and forget Krishna, be the Lord ourself, take all the credit for everything ourself. We actually become encased in a material body, which is also called the city of nine gates. But Srila Prabhupada often mentioned that it's also like an airplane. And so our goal is to go to the spiritual world. And the Vedas teach us through various means how to get there. While we're on the ground, you know, we can take instructions from our pilot, our master pilot, who's a teacher. But when we're in the air, we have to fly our own plane. So what's amazing about this literature is that it gives guidance. It's a guidance system for our plane. And we're the pilot of this body. And we have to steer this complex arrangement of material nature, the body and the mind, through and navigate all the different obstacles. And so the strong advice of Lord Krishna given here, very strong advice, is that, you know, you've done all this endeavor to become a pilot. You know, don't crash it into the mountains of sense gratification. Right? Steer clear of the mountains of sense gratification. You know, aim higher. Aim for the spiritual sky. But tapasya sounds really hard, and I don't want to do it. Right? I don't want to do hard things. I want a soft bed. I want warm water. You know, I want really smooth things to wear. I want really nice food. I want to see really beautiful things. I want something for every sense, right? So that's the mind talking. The mind, you know, wants to arrange everything properly for maximum sense gratification. Every sense should have something. Srila Prabhupada writes in his wonderful book, Beyond Birth and Death, you know, the ear wants to hear some beautiful music. You know, the eye wants to see the beautiful form of a beautiful boy or a beautiful girl. You know, the nose wants to smell some fragrance that's really nice. The tongue wants to taste very palatable dishes, right? But Lord Krishna tells us time and time again, and he'll continue to tell us until we get it. And the spiritual master continues to tell us until we get it, that sense gratification is actually, although it seems like the thing that makes us happy, it is the source of our misery. Jehi samsparsha jaboga dukkha yonaya evate ajantavanta kunteya. I'm mangling this verse. Na teshu ramate buddha. Ramate means take pleasure in or delight in. And Lord Krishna says in the Gita that the wise do not delight in the contact of the senses with their objects, which is actually the cause of misery. Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate. Far from being, you know, the goal of life, as advertised by every single, you know, ad for alcohol. They used to have a lot of ads for tobacco on television. Every ad for, you know, steakhouses. You know, every ad for, you know, girls gone wild. You know, every ad for something for your senses, which is meant to sell a product, and is actually the philosophy of our misdirected civilization, that the end is sense gratification. You are successful when you are in a hot tub, you know, surrounded by beautiful naked women, and you have money that you're just throwing around, and you're smoking a cigar, and there's some, you know, disco music playing in the background, you know. You have then reached the pinnacle of success, right? We're bombarded with that message because it's Kali Yuga. And the asuras are in charge. They're trying to run the universe in the way they think is best. Asuras don't like the plan of the Lord. They specifically don't want to hear the message of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada writes in Srimad Bhagavatam, in italics, which he rarely does, that there is specific propaganda by a certain section of society to stop the propagation of the glories of the Lord. So, but Srimad Bhagavatam analyzes material life in minute detail. Again, from womb to tomb, from cradle to grave, it is analyzed that the living being in the womb of his mother is in a miserable condition, being floating in the amniotic fluid, very tightly packed in the womb. Srila Prabhupada often said, tightly packed up in the womb. Just praying for release because it's so hellish. And everything is torturous. The skin of the infant is so sensitive. And there's little worms that are floating around and they're biting the child. And when the mother eats something spicy, then the child is suffering miserably. And in very fortunate cases, the child actually prays to the Supreme Lord that when I get out, I promise I'll serve you this time. And then one gets out and all the relatives are say goo goo gaga and pinch you on the cheek and hold you and sing songs to you and tell you how beautiful and wonderful you are. And you start to identify with your body. And as you, you know, become, you know, trained in fruitive activities, as you grow, you learn to work hard for a living. You become attached to the opposite body out of attraction, which is based on sense gratification, and you become entangled in the material world. Prahlad Maharaj says that sense gratification is available in all species of life. And we get our happiness or distress automatically. So even if we try for happiness, which, you know, the materialistic society is always whipping us and telling us, try for happiness. That's the goal of your life. You know, don't join the Hare Krishnas. They don't understand how to enjoy properly. You'll be miserable, son, if you join them, because they don't know properly the goal of life. They're abnegating their senses. They're giving up all these things which are actually wonderful. Why are they so hateful to themselves? Why is their God so sadistic that he wants to tell them to become skin and bones by performing austerities and not enjoy all the pleasures of the tongue and the belly and the genitals and the eyes and the ears and all the wonderful things that, you know, the creation of the Lord, if they're theistic, offers us to enjoy. But that's actually miserable. So the result of sense gratification is one immediately becomes fearful. The first symptom of material life and forgetfulness of Krishna is fear. One becomes immediately fearful for one's own very life, and then for many other things. My pile of sense gratification, if it starts to get big, I start to worry that other sense gratifiers want to come and get some of mine. So I have to defend myself. I have to protect my pile of riches, my palace. As soon as I have a palace and control, then everybody else who wants control also is my competitor. And all the entities within this material world are competitors for sense gratification. And so it becomes miserable. Full of discord, just like if you have a nice tranquil pond and you throw a handful of pebbles in the pond, each concentric point of radiation of the circles will eventually come out and then all the waves will clash and it will be very chaotic because everyone has their own individual center. Therefore, chaos is produced. So just like this world as we see it now, everyone is getting their own fiefdom, their own kingdom, even if it's just, you know, one guy with his family, in Frisco with his, you know, 5-bedroom house and 2 cars in the garage, next to the golf course. He's moving up in the company and he just got the VP position, and he's about to, you know, start his own company and become the lord of his own little universe, right? But he's got to protect himself against so many competitors. There's so many people that want to eat his lunch. It's miserable. One cannot even sleep at night. When they become rich, they constantly worry about the money that they have, that the government is going to tax me, that my, you know, like I said, my competitors are going to try to steal my business or outmarket me, outmaneuver me in the marketplace. Or maybe my investment fund manager is going to embezzle all my money, and then my fantastic retirement plan is gone. Or maybe some other man is going to try to steal my beautiful wife away from me. Right? Oh, they said I have cancer. Now, you know, I'm full of other anxieties. You know, how will my family be maintained? What will happen to me? Krishna says that the demons, to the end of their life, they're full of anxieties because of this constant striving for sense gratification. So Lord Krishna, again, in this verse, calls it insignificant sense gratification. Most of us don't think it's insignificant, but he's trying to teach us. We are supposed to try to see not through our material eyes, but through the eyes of the Shastra, Jnana Chakshusha, and see what is happening. When we are in the mode of goodness, we can see what's happening. But when we are in the modes of ignorance and passion, we cannot see what is happening even if we try to. And especially if we're not ever endeavoring to become transcendentalists, our vision is very limited. Even in the mode of goodness, there's more ability to see things, but we still may not have complete vision. So, is the Lord, trying to punish us because of our, you know, original sin? Right? No, actually, We have turned away from Krishna and we made a choice. And that choice was somehow to enjoy separately from Krishna. We may not know why we made that choice in our current state. We just sort of woke up in this body and it's full of miseries. And there's birth, death, old age, and disease. And there's the three miseries of material existence. Also the adiatmaka miseries. Those miseries caused by my own body and mind, the Adi Bhautika miseries, those miseries caused by other living entities. And then, of course, we're very familiar now with the Adi Daivika miseries. Puerto Rico was just leveled by a gigantic hurricane. So acts of God, acts of the devas. We can't control these miseries. We're constantly being poked and prodded by the trident. That's Durga's trident, it's the three miseries. And then there's more. There's the whips. I believe the whips are hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, death. Those are the whips. So the miseries are unlimited. And if the Lord created this world, why isn't it full of bountiful things for me to enjoy and have dominion over? Right? Well, because it's not our nature. Because we are not constituted to be enjoyers, it is an impossible situation. So Lord Krishna, being very compassionate to us because he loves us so much, and he respects our independence above all else and our free will, he respects the independence of the living entity so much that he doesn't interfere with it.
That's a tremendous love. He doesn't hold a gun to our head and say, love me, or else I will kill you. Because that's not what he wants. He wants pure love. He wants spontaneous love that comes from us, bhakti. Why does he want that? Is he an egotist? I'm going to ask my fellow devotees here, why does Krishna want us to worship him? Doesn't that sound egotistical? Does anyone have any idea? Is it for his benefit that he wants us to worship him? No, it's for our benefit. Out of his compassion, he wants us to be again what we are. He wants us to again be what we actually are. I'm not saying that he's not enjoying, because he is the supreme enjoyer.
But he doesn't need it.
Right. But Krishna doesn't, you know, he's independent and he doesn't need anything. Sure. So it's actually out of his unlimited compassion for us, because he loves us so much that it breaks his heart that we suffer. Lord Krishna is the most compassionate. He has the softest heart. And so he constantly sends devotees. He constantly sends his, as Srila Prabhupada says, his servants and sons and spiritual masters. And he comes himself to perform pastimes, to reclaim fallen souls, so that those fallen souls will see what he does and talk about it, and that we can hear about the amazing pastimes of the Lord. But at the age of 7, to protect the inhabitants of Vrindavan from the wrath of angry Indra, that he lifted Govardhan Hill, just like a child lifts up a mushroom, right? He lifts up Govardhan Hill with the pinky of his left hand and holds it up for days while torrents of rain. So just imagine if Puerto Rico was able to have Lord Krishna to just hold up a mountain to protect everyone from the storm. Oh. So Lord Krishna is all-powerful. He can do anything, and his activities are wonderful. And we can take shelter. We can take full shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After all, he's the author of this universe. He created everything that we have experience of. Everything within our sensory experience that we're perceiving is his creation, is emanating from him. Janma jasya yata. By understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and hearing his pastimes, hearing his teachings, as we're hearing here, the pleasure is so great of reviving our original spiritual nature that tapa trion mulanam, that the material miseries are removed. Even in this lifetime, our material miseries will be eradicated simply by the process of shravanam, kirtanam, Vishnu smaranam. So it's out of the Lord's supreme compassion that he comes as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And even though we are so unqualified, all born in ignorance, all born as lower than Shudra class, in a meat-eating society, Yavana Malecha society, we are practically born, and as soon as, you know, before we can even talk, we're given the remnants of slaughter, right? So the demonic society, the Asuric society that does not like to live according to the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their dominance is so great that everyone is indoctrinated into their philosophy of enjoy the senses, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you will die. And we don't know what happens after that, because our instruments of perception and our measuring devices can't come to the answer. Right? But they don't know that that's not the way to find out knowledge. Knowledge has to be revealed. Knowledge descends. It comes from higher sources. So the ascending process of knowledge is the scientific realm of the senses and the ability to gather knowledge through our senses is considered ignorance. That knowledge obtained through sense perception is dark. It's considered ignorant. Only knowledge which comes from the Lord, which comes from the Vedas, Shabda Brahma. And when we hear from those who have heard from the pure disciplic succession, which starts from Lord Krishna, comes through Lord Brahma in our case, Vyasa, Narada, then one can be in perfect knowledge. Srotriyam Brahmanishtam, one can be fixed in perfect knowledge. But it all starts with faith, right? So at some point, many of us had no knowledge of Krishna. And then by some kind of sincerity on our part, or maybe some good luck, some compassion of the devotees who are acting on behalf of Lord Chaitanya to extend that compassion, who are acting on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, who was the most merciful, they try to inject into the ear holes of the ignorant living beings the holy name and the sambandha gyan, the basic knowledge of the relationship of the living entity to the world. No, you are not your body. Yes, you are an eternal servant of Krishna. Yes, there is ecstasy and pleasure, but you're looking for it in the wrong places. So if one performs extreme austerities, as described, you know, with fires all around, blazing sun overhead, freezing cold water, and then at the end only goes to get, you know, a big bowl of ice cream and cake, then what's the use of all those austerities? So much austerity has been performed, and it's Shrama Evahi Kevalam. According to Bhagavatam, even ascension to the heavenly planets, which is, you know, desired by all the most pious karmis, is considered useless labor. Shrama Evahi Kevalam. Anything which does not promote attraction to Lord Krishna and devotional service is considered useless labor. And Lord Krishna considers those who pursue sense gratification to be fools. So thank you for listening. Let us try to take heed of Lord Krishna's instructions. Because of his great compassion for us, he wants us to be happy. And these instructions are there for our benefit. So I'll end here. Hare Krishna. Any comments, questions, corrections? I think there's you want to get the microphone? Because, yeah, on the top of the, if there's no batteries in it, bring it, and I'll put the batteries in. Get two batteries, if there's no batteries in it. Yeah, does it turn on?
Nope.
You have to go get two, here, give me that. Go get two batteries out of the charger, and I'll load it up. This is the devotees, there's only three of us in the temple room, and there's probably others listening. In case there are, we'll get the microphone so we can hear the questions. Okay, hold that down. There we go.
Thank you very much. With respect to the point that you were making, the question that you raised about whether or not the Lord benefits, that was the word you used, does the Lord benefit from our devotion, from our love, from our service, from our worship? Does he benefit from this? I had to kind of ponder that for a moment before, because it's hard to answer, and for me it's hard to answer in just simple yes or no terms. I once heard, with respect to the point that you raised, I once heard the matter explained thusly. Say that, you know, you're a father, right? I'm not a father. I'm not a parent. This isn't something I can directly, personally relate to. I have no children, but I can understand it on an intellectual level. but I've never experienced it myself. Say that, you know, you're someone's father, and a little child is saving up his allowance money all year long.
Speak into the mic.
Sorry. A little child is saving up his allowance money all year long that he's getting from his dad. Once a week he gets $5. Right, and he saves up his allowance money all year long, and he wants to buy the dad something real nice on his birthday.
Hmm.
Right, so he saves up $5 a week for a year, and one of the things he's able to do is he buys his dad a tie. And he's just a little 6-year-old child, right? 8 years old, little kid. So he buys his dad a tie on his birthday.
Right.
So the dad is so happy, and the little child is happy that the father is happy, and the father, you know, he just loves the child loves the dad, and then it just loves the gift. Right, wears it, he's happy, he's proud, look at what my son did for me, and the child's like, oh, my father is so happy, and everybody's happy. But the little child, and it's just a sweet exchange, a loving relationship, right?
Yes.
But the little child in his little naive mind doesn't realize, and it's quite beside the point to the child anyway, that he got all the money to buy the tie from dad in the first place. So everything that the dad gave the kid is just coming back to dad, but just in a different form. And for that matter, dad has a whole closet full of ties. He doesn't need a new tie.
Right. Very good.
What he wants is the child's love, and what the child wants is the father's love. See, so this is, does the father benefit from a new tie? Well, in a sense, no, and in a sense, yes. You see?
Very good. No, thank you. That's a very good example. Very good example.
Say, it was C.S. Lewis, a Christian theologian, C.S. Lewis, in one of his books that gave that example.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Anybody else?
I don't need it. Approval? Any comments? Huh? Okay. So, we'll end there. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.